everybody. This is Beattie Combretos, and welcome again to the Ask Beattie Show. In about 10 minutes, we're going to be talking to a matchmaker extraordinaire, Lisa Clampett, who is the founder and CEO of Lisa Clampett Matchmaking here in New York City. But before we do that, we need to talk about some of the issues of the day. And, of course, number one this weekend, look at what's happened on May the 25th. Floyd George, 46, an African-American man, murdered by four police officers in Minneapolis. There are riots and demonstrations around the country. And, you know, can you imagine the officers kept his knee on the Floyd George's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, leaving him unable to breathe? And what does our president have to say about all of this? Well, President Trump is encouraging the governors to use more aggressive tactics on the protester. And so the cycle of violence and so the cycle of racism continues to be encouraged by our president. And look at what else we are all dealing with in this country. People are still asking, despite the fact that the country is starting to open up, am I still at risk for the virus? I may have tested negative last week or even a couple of days ago, but what does that mean? I have antibodies, but does that mean that I am not going to be at risk for contracting the virus? Well, I have a job. My job has changed so much in the last couple of months for people who are actually fortunate enough to have jobs. Most of us are working from home. I see all my patients on Skype and on Zoom. Concerns by so many business owners. Am I going to actually lose my business? And here in New York, so many small businesses are closing, and they are going to be closing permanently as a result of what's been going on. On a more personal note, people are worried, am I going to be able to continue to pay my rent? Are my children going to be able to go to daycare and go to school? You know, love is great, but we've been together almost 24 hours a day now for the last few months. And it's dicey, and it's particularly dicey when you're in a relationship where there's been domestic violence and where things have been extremely, extremely tense even before COVID-19. Millions and millions of Americans are concerned about losing their health care benefits. And when am I going to be able to see my friends, even though people are starting to meet and, of course, hopefully are respecting the social distance guidelines? When am I going to be able to actually hug my friends and my family members? And, you know, the real question, I think, for all of us is, will life ever get back to normal? And what is the new normal going to actually be like? What I've noticed in my readings is that calls to mental health helplines are surging. And of course, I see that as a really, really positive thing. And as, you know, Lori Gottlieb in her book, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, I think these days we all need to find somebody to talk to and not necessarily a therapist. 52% of those who are now working remotely feel more anxious working from home. Although I think a lot of people are kind of settling into it and are wondering, you know, what is it going to be like long term. And our business is actually going to be changing the guidelines. I mean, they're going to be saving a lot of money for people who are going to be working at home. And is that going to be the new normal for so many Americans these days? You know, other statistics that I have been reading about is that Americans are actually doubling down on some of our worst habits to cope with the emotional stress related to the virus. Apparently, alcohol sales have jumped, with spirits up 75%, wine up 66%, and beer 42%. Cannabis, marijuana has reached an all-time high in March, even though medical experts have warned us that marijuana and vaping and tobacco may actually increase the risk of the virus. People have been exercising less and eating more, of course, now that the restrictions are lessening. Hopefully, people are going to be, you know, getting out more and walking around the block and taking better care of their health. And of course, we're all very concerned about the possible long-term effects of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, and anxiety. And if you find yourself that you are judging your emotions or responses, your ups, your downs, your worries, your anxiety, some of your lows, remind yourself that your feelings are really normal and justified under the circumstances. And what I find to be really helpful, other than walking and playing tennis, but of course the tennis courts here in New York City are still not open, I'm finding that lifting weights and breathing instead of reaching for the phone and the computer really does help to allay some of our fears and some of our feelings of anxiety. And I really think that it is important to set a news and a social media cutoff time. I have patients who are literally glued to the television set, you know, day in and day out. And it's very, very anxiety provoking. And I'm not suggesting that we, you know, put our heads, you know, under the sand, but that, you know, a couple times a day we can check in and find out what the new regulations are going to be. And also, you know, in many, many ways, and I've spoken to friends and patients, this has really been, and it really is, an opportunity to reevaluate our lives, how we want to live, with whom we want to live, and possibly reset our lives in ways that are much, much more positive than the ways we have been living prior to the virus. And, you know, here are some of my tips that I think really do help people to get through the days. And I've always suggested that you don't need to find a therapist necessarily, but find a support group where you can really feel comfortable to honestly express your feelings of anxiety and worry and depression and sadness and anger, and to give yourself permission to be authentic with yourself and others. And I also try and recommend for all of you to create a daily routine to help normalize your life. You know, for example, I found every day that getting dressed, even though I may have no place to go, doing my makeup and hair and eating breakfast and taking my vitamins and exercising really all helped me to begin my workday with a more positive attitude, particularly since I now see all of my clients on Zoom or Skype or on the telephone. And we need to be aware of the things that we actually can do to keep ourselves relatively sane and safe. Of course, washing our hands, and we've been hearing about this for months and months, and maintaining the 6 foot social distance, and of course wearing masks. And it is very, very important to eat healthily, since we need to really keep our immune system strong. And please, please keep a check on how much sugar and alcohol you are consuming. And I cannot stress the importance of exercise. And I think what we've all found, so many people, including myself, have discovered that we really don't need to go to a gym to keep ourselves physically and mentally in shape. And I've actually found some terrific online video workouts, and you might as well just check them out and see whether or not there's some workouts that can help you and really help motivate you to continue to exercise. And of course, the importance of getting sufficient sleep. And as I mentioned, you don't want to expose yourself to the television or computer 24 hours a day. And of course, respecting each other's boundaries, since, you know, we've been at home together now for several months, and people are going to be spending a lot more time together. And don't forget to take that walk around the block, because I found that getting outside, even for a short period of time, it really does. It can make such a big difference, and everything is now starting to blossom outside. And many people find meditation to be soothing. So if you've never tried it, you may want to give it a shot. And if you find that if meditation is not for you, that's okay too. But if you are really finding that the depression and the anxiety and the worry or the anger or feelings of despair, and some people that I have been talking to have actually been feeling quite suicidal, just not being able to see a way out of this new situation, I really encourage you, as I've been encouraging you now for years, in fact, today is the 300th Ask Beatty show here on the Progressive Radio Network, and it's not a weakness to be reaching out for professional help. It is a strength, my friends, and it can really make all the difference in the world. So I want to make a really nice transition here, and actually I would love to hear the matchmaker song again for a couple of minutes before I formally introduce my guest, Lisa Clampett, who is the founder and CEO of Lisa Clampett Matchmaking. So if we can hear that music again, and maybe we can dance around the room and think about the pluses of considering a matchmaking service when you are looking for love, I think it would really help to set the mood. So can we hear matchmaker again? Well, and we have today a real-life matchmaker here on the Ask Beatty Show, Lisa Clampett. Welcome to the show today.
Thank you so much. I haven't heard that song in a while. It was refreshing.
Well, I tell you, after talking about the Floyd George murder and all of the issues with the virus, that's such a pleasure to be able to make a transition and talk about love and talk about matchmakers. So listen, tell us all about the uniqueness, which it is, of your matchmaking service here in New York City.
You know, it's interesting because, like, with all the stuff that's going on in the world, it's so heavy and so intense, and it just makes people realize how important it is to have someone in their lives. And I'd say that when everything started hitting, you know, several months ago, I realized that this job that I've devoted 21 years of my life to is probably one of the most important things someone could be doing right now, is helping people prioritize open their mind to find love and to find someone to go through life with. And we've actually, matchmakers in general have been quite busy in the past few months, where people are reprioritizing what they thought was so important that they were filling their times with, as opposed to like love, career, you know, next year I'll start focusing on this, or being particularly picky, or, you know, not open to the possibilities. And I'd say that people have made a real big transition in the last few months with really thinking about, wow, I want this in my life. I want a partner to go through life with. And I'm going to be more open, and I'm going to be more ready and less nitpicky about the details of like, oh, he's 5'10 as opposed to 6'2. You know, things that we think are so important in life become less important when everything hits the fan like it has. So I would say that this has been, you know, when I'm sort of struggling personally through the same issues everyone else is, it makes me feel like I need to like rise to the occasion and help people. And that's what I've been doing for all these months, is really, really helping people to make things happen in their life that have been put off for all different reasons.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, look, the most important thing in life is love. And I think that we get so diverted by the bigger, the better, the more money, the bigger house, when in mm-hmm. fact, it is really all about love. And so many people that I know socially and patients that I see are so frustrated with the whole online dating process, the swiping to the right and swiping to the left. And even though, you know, I was, you know, reading statistics, 80% of people now are actually meeting online. I mean, what I'm hearing is just an incredible amount of frustration with that process, and that more and more people that I hear are really contemplating going to matchmakers, which is a real shift, don't you think, in the last number of years?
Yeah, you know, I think that people were really excited about the thought of meeting someone through apps or online, but the reality is what it has promoted in a lot of cases is just ADD dating, you know, bigger, better, as you were saying, you know, like how can I sort of put up with this person if they, you know, have the wrong hairstyle, because there's 20 more waiting where that came from. And so
exactly.
I'd say that, yeah, it's really, really been frustrating if you're really serious about finding love. And the other thing is that, you know, not only does it promote sort of a disposable way of dating, but it's so hard to rely on proper information. You know, people will lie about their height, age, weight, even marital status, and even whether they're serious about finding someone or not. And so there's a lot of disappointment, a lot of wasted time. And I think people are getting fed up, and they're saying, you know, I want you to take hundreds and hundreds of possibilities and narrow it down to the top people that have my same relationship goals, my same values, and are who they say they are. And that's what a matchmaker does. And so it really, you know, for people who are serious, they're really making an investment of time and energy into finding someone to work with that will represent them, to find them what they're looking for and screen through all the craziness that's been a waste of time. So, yeah, there has been a huge transition in that sense.
And, you know, one of the things, of course, that I love, Lisa, about your qualifications is that you have a master's degree in social work from the University of Michigan, so that you're just not a person, you know, who's opened up an office, that you have some serious psychological insight and understanding about human relationships and human behavior, and it really does matter. And also, I was very impressed to read, seriously, that you're the founder and president of the Matchmaking Institute, which I've never heard of before, which is the only matchmaking school in the world authorized to issue matchmaking certification. I didn't even know that there was such a thing as certification for a matchmaker.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I got my master and I got certified in, licensed as a social worker back in the early 90s. And then when I went into matchmaking in the late 90s, I could not believe that there was no regulations, no school, no way to learn, no way to collaborate. And I was like, I'm here, let's collaborate. And there were like crickets, no one around saying, hey, this is not, you're my competition. This is not about collaboration. And I thought that was completely wrong because that's not where I came from. And so, in 2003, I created the Matchmaking Institute because I was like, if I'm not going to find people to collaborate with, I'm going to create people to be educated in a new way of thinking about the industry. And so little by little, we started having conferences, global conferences, bringing people together, and so the new matchmakers and then the established matchmakers started seeing the benefit of collaboration and education. And now it's kind of a main way of doing business is through collaboration. So it's been a huge shift for the industry. And I would say that my master's and my education in, therapy and coaching and stuff has made sort of a profound effect in terms of the way we, at least at Climate Matchmaking, screen and understand good candidates that would fit for our company based on real psychological evaluation and history of relationships and family history and what are they looking for? Are they realistic? Are they really ready to find love? And that's incredibly helpful to being successful in the process. So that's been a really valuable resource to have.
Well, I would think that if you don't go through that process and if you don't think about all of those issues, it's not possible to do effective matchmaking. I mean, it's just like in therapy, you have to look at family history, you have to look at goals and values. I mean, all of the things that we were trained to do as social workers, you are bringing to your matchmaking service. But I know a lot of people, because I posted that you were going to be a guest on the Ask Beauty Show today, got a lot of response, and mostly from women, and they wanted to know, so who are Lisa's clients?
Well, I have to say, biasly speaking, I love my clients, but most of the clients are successful, relationship-oriented, great guys, and they are
mostly men, is that correct?
Yeah, mostly men. Once in a while we will take on a woman as a client, but our company is very boutique and we're small. We take on just a handful of clients at any given time, partially because my style is I really love to get to know the client, and then I love to spend time trying to understand what would make that person have the best case scenario to end up in a relationship. So we do a lot of coaching. We do a lot of screening of potential matches. So it's pretty easy. The best thing to do is to go onto my website, lisaclampett.com. And if your listeners feel like they would be a good match, attractive, relationship oriented, women that would be a match for one of my clients, they could write to my matchmaker, Ashley, and it's Ashley at lisaclampett.com. So they could either apply on my website or write to Ashley. And if we feel like someone is a good candidate for one of our clients, and our clients' age, the ages are anywhere from late 20s to 60s, sometimes 70s. It really, really depends on who we have at any given time. But basically, we then will look and see if we have a potential client that would be a match for one of the applicants, we would do now, we do video virtual screening. We used to meet everyone in person, but right now we're just doing video. And then we would determine, so these guys are really great guys. They tend to be, you know, in great shape, super smart, entrepreneurs, leaders in sort of what they do, that are really busy and really are not wanting to waste their time with the wrong people. So they basically hire us as a personal assistant for their love life to screen and qualify potential candidates that do fit the criteria of what they're looking for, their relationship goals, their values, and who would make sense, you know, to meet, you know, in terms of like the profiles. It really, really depends who we have. So you never know, but these guys are really great candidates. And I would say that when we screen potential clients, we really make sure they're relationship ready. So that's a very positive thing. I think that, especially for women, you know, you think that in, New York in particular, like, oh, there's a woman, she's really attractive, she must get hit on all the time. But the reality is, the more attractive the woman, the more she gets hit on by the players and the people that are not relationship oriented. And so, strangely enough, I think a lot of the gals that come to us are like, I just don't want to waste my time anymore with guys that aren't serious. And I want to meet a guy that's relationship oriented. So I think it works both ways. It's much more challenging when you're not meeting the right people that are really serious.
Exactly. So these men, you say they range in age from late 20s to 70s. And do you actually feel that it's because perhaps their priorities and the way they chose to spend their time up to this point really was the primary reason why they did not connect? I mean, they're successful, they're attractive, they're intelligent. Was it really the fact that finding someone prior to meeting with you was not a priority for them?
It really depends. I'd say we do have guys that either have been focusing on their careers so that they're super busy and now they're ready, or maybe they're newly divorced or widowed and are looking for, they're like, oh my God, I haven't dated in 20 years.
Right.
So we do get a lot of guys that will be like, I just broke up with my partner of this many years and I just don't want to make the same mistakes, or I want to, you know, not have to spend time wasting my energy on the wrong type of people. So there is a whole variety of reasons. And I would say, yes, there are some guys that, let's say, are, you know, 40s, 50s even, and saying, wow, you know, I was not ready until now, but I want to have kids. And so I need to start making this a priority. And they will circle and try and figure out, like, hey, can you really help me get relationship ready? Or they will have such a fulfilling life and such a successful career that they wake up from like 30 and then they're 50, you know, and that does happen. But a lot of our clients come to us because they don't want to repeat the same relationships they've had in the past, or they have limited exposure and limited time. So I would say, you know, a really important thing is that if someone is really happy in their life and they are content with the status quo, you have to make sure that they're still motivated to find someone. So there's got to be like enough there where they're sort of like, wow, I don't want to be alone anymore. I do want to find someone. So their life is not 100% perfect. There's got to be that space that they're ready to compromise and accommodate another person and in a relationship. So we have every type of person, but they just have to be very solid that they're ready for a relationship. And part of our strategy when we go through really screening people is to determine, like, are they open to the possibilities, or do they come with a list of like 1,000 must-haves? You know, the more, the longer your list, the more barriers you're putting up to say no, as opposed to say yes. And so that's a really, really important screening process on both ends, both for the clients. Are we going to work with them and be successful, as well as the matches? Are they really open and ready?
And of course, what I have found, and you and I, we've not yet had an opportunity to meet in person because of the, you know, the current situation. But, you know, you and I have talked about what my research has found is that in order to be able to have a successful relationship with anybody, each of us needs to be in a really good place emotionally, psychologically, psychiatrically. We have to have learned the ingredients to go into a successful relationship and then, of course, be able and open and ready to make a really, really good assessment. So one of the things that I'm really curious about is, have the men, since you work mostly with men, have they been open and willing to look at their own, what I call, skeletons in the closet and unfinished business? Because, you know, for most people, it's so easy for us to blame the other person. You know, he didn't do this or she didn't do that, without really taking an honest, in-depth look at what was my role. What did I bring to the relationship that really contributed to things not working out? So I guess I'm curious, how open are they? And in your assessment process, do you get into this, these kinds of issues with your clients?
Yeah, we do look at patterns, and we look at, you know, what specifically happened, and are there things that could have been done differently, et cetera. But you have to be really careful as a matchmaker, as it's not therapy. And at the very best, it's coaching. And they are hiring us to do a job, which is to find them what they're looking for. And what I think is, we determine what, how much responsibility they're willing to take or not is one piece, but we determine, are they relationship ready? And if we present someone, are they going to say no, or are they going to say yes? And we determine that. And then I think what kind of a sneaky sideways way of doing things is doing the dance of, you know, since it's not therapy, how can we coach? How can we sort of sneak coaching in to be able to make the matches more effective? So some people will completely take responsibility and say, hey, listen, you know, I could have been doing this, or this is my role in it. And some people will say, you know, I just haven't found the right person, and it's about the right person. I'm like, well, why haven't you found the right person? So are they someone that we could work with and do sort of a coaching dance with, a little bit more under the radar, where we're not saying, listen, you got to do 6 months of serious coaching before you're going to be ready. You can't do that all the time with alpha successful men. You kind of have to take them where they are and work with them, gain their trust, and then build a relationship where you're helping them to make the best possible decisions they can to make better choices, A, about accountability on their end, but also, you know, changing patterns and not repeating the same way of, you know, choosing people that haven't been productive, or choosing people that they haven't been productive in the relationship. So I would say that we're not going to work with someone that's completely not able to have coaching, but we're also not going to approach it that this is like, you know, 6 months of therapy before we get them a relationship. So it's a really delicate balance. It's very different
yes.
from men that are willing to come in and go to coaching or to go into therapy. That's not what they're asking for. So that's the dance, is the sort of, in the assessment, you balance, how can I be successful with this person given where they are? And we all have skeletons in the closet, for sure. The question is, are the skeletons going to sabotage the success of a potential relationship? And that's what we try and determine within our assessment tools, just to determine how dysfunctional has their history been, and what are they bringing
right.
with them that would be destructive.
Right. So things like, for example, I mean, I would think that you would ask about, substance abuse of various different kinds and physical abuse and verbal abuse and emotional abuse. I mean, things like that, I mean, they need to, if these are issues, they need to own, because they'll certainly surface in the next relationship if they have not acknowledged, addressed, and resolved their own issues. And as you say, Lisa, it's got to be a very delicate process to go through. But, what I found so often, when people talk about, I've never been able to find anybody, even though they're successful and attractive, et cetera, typically, I rarely hear somebody ask the question, what is it about me? What is it about my issues? What is it about my unfinished business that has gotten in the way of me being able to either find and maintain and sustain a successful relationship? So that's what I'm just sort of curious about. Here, two social workers talking to each other right now, but I would think that these are really important things to determine. And that if
Well, I
these
would,
are
yeah.
problems and issues, they need to actually do something about it so that they're not going to be repeating history.
I'd say, though, without a doubt, you're bringing up substance abuse and anger issues and all that. That is just something that's weeded right out. That is not a part
Good.
of anybody we would be working with if there's any of those issues. And you can tell pretty quickly by taking a pretty serious history, how they, what is their lifestyle like, drinking habits, do they do drugs, what is their mental health history, what is their family history, but also the way they talk about their exes, the way they talk about their history. If there's anger, you can tell that there's anger, and that is not a client that we work with. That doesn't even enter our realm. When we're talking about issues that might impede the ability to be successful on their own, I'm just talking about maybe avoidant. Maybe they're working too hard and they don't make finding love a priority, or they're less communicative, or those issues. I am not talking about anger, substance abuse, any of those. That just should not even be in the realm of a matchmaker's office. And that is the important part to screen out. And you can screen out if you spend a couple hours doing some serious background history and questions and really observations of what they're presenting. Furthermore, we make it very clear if anything comes out that is an issue in the future and in the working relationship, we have the right to not work with them. So we're very careful. That doesn't even come up on the radar for the most part. So
Do you do
assuming
background
that
checks? I mean, do you do criminal background checks?
we only work with people that are referred to us, we do not advertise. So every single client we work with is 100% referred from somebody. So in terms of like when women apply and they don't have a context, like for instance, people that would apply through this, we look at their social media, we look at their background, we look at who they know, we look at, so that's sort of a larger umbrella. But in terms of the clients and a lot of the female matches, it's all word of mouth. We don't advertise, and that's a really, really important screening piece.
Interesting.
It's huge for us because that's why we're so boutique. For 21 years, it's really been like recommendations and referrals only. So that really helped.
And I would think that that would help people to feel safe. Because if you're having people who are referred to you rather than somebody who sees you on television or reads about you in the newspaper, I mean, I would think that that really does differentiate you and your matchmaking service from other matchmakers. So you're very careful, obviously, who you take on.
We are incredibly, people don't realize how particular we are. And it's interesting because people will say, oh, I have people for you. I'm going to refer these potential clients. And they will be shocked that I'm like, no, I'm sorry. We sat with him for 2 hours. He's not ready for a relationship. We cannot work with him. Or he's so incredibly particular that he's putting up a barrier about, you know, what he's ready to have in his life, and we can't work with him because we don't feel like we're going to be successful. Like, we're very particular about that. And I think that that, like, allows people to trust us, that if we're saying, hey, I think we're going to be successful, here are all the reasons why, these are the great aspects of what we think we could do for you, and how we could market you, and how we could find exactly what you're looking for. And then if there are red flags or there are issues, we're pretty straightforward about that too. We say, listen, these are the problems. As you know, you haven't had a relationship in a long time, and we've mentioned a handful of people, and you are basically saying, well, if it has her looks, her personality, her age, you know, let's put five people together. That would be the perfect gal. We're like, well, you know, let's talk about setting realistic expectations. Are you really ready for a relationship? So all these sort of things are really important elements before we even offer a contract to somebody. We really, really do.
No, I think that's really important. And as I say, I think it would make, you know, prospective, you know, clients and people who you're matching them with feel just a real sense of security. You know, I'm looking at the New York Times article, which is where I found you in the vow section. And you were saying one of the things that you said was that about 80% of matchmakers now offer coaching services. So what is involved in your, in quotes, coaching services? So you've gone through the assessment, you accept the person, and then the next phase is the introduction. But what is involved in the coaching?
So almost all matchmakers should be having coaching within their matchmaking product. So that should be a given. You cannot do successful matchmaking if you're not giving feedback and offering basic coaching along the way. So let's assume that that's a given. For it should be 100% of matchmakers should be doing this, you know. So
Absolutely.
So when I talk about 80%, it's actually matchmakers that separately offer coaching without matchmaking as a coaching product, which is a whole new thing. From the past, like, I would say you talk 10 years ago and matchmakers were matchmakers. They didn't really offer a separate product. But the realization is, if I am a really good coach and I'm also a matchmaker, maybe I meet someone that I could not necessarily successfully match, but they could totally utilize some coaching, and that they could then be very successful maybe on their own, even if they had coaching. So a lot of matchmakers had started looking at, how can I diversify and be able to work with more people more successfully without always having, like, the struggle of, like, if I take this person on, I have to make sure I have candidates to match them with. That's taken away when you do coaching. So if you are a matchmaker and also a coach, you can really work with more people in different ways. So
do you do the coaching? Do you actually do the coaching yourself? Because I know that you have other staff. And are they all trained sufficiently to be able to, you know, deal with some dicey issues that may, you know, come up?
Yeah, so all my staff personally, they're all certified matchmakers and certified coaches. So they are all trained. But that being said, if there's ever an issue, I come in and we have a meeting with a client all together. So So there's always accountability of, hey, let's bring it all together and let's look at what interventions, if there's anything too complicated, or we may assess them. And maybe they're a client that I have to work directly with. I do not work directly with a lot of clients, but some of them I do. And it depends. Do they need my type of services, or are they going to do well with someone who could do lighter coaching, but a lot of recruiting, you know, specifically what are you looking for? This is, you know, Ashley is an amazing matchmaker and recruiter. My other matchmaker, Beth, is an amazing coach, and she is sort of like the Zen Buddha of matchmaking. She will like take anyone and have them feel like heard and understood and present amazing matches. So each of us have a very different personality. So when we meet with someone, we determine which of the three of us should the client work with. And so we divide it that way. And then if there's a, we constantly, like as you do in therapy and social work and all that, we have client, we have, team meetings regularly where we say, okay, let's talk about all the clients. Let's talk about these are the issues that are come up. You know, what do you think? And we really are able to take all of our strengths and bring it together with a solution of services and matches and coaching and stuff. So it's a really cohesive team. And I so always highly recommend when matchmakers and coaches go into this field that even if they're solo practitioners, create a colleagues, which is why I created the Institute, create colleagues that you can bounce ideas off of and get support and get ideas so that, that you're not acting alone with complex issues, because human beings are always, it's going to be a roller coaster, you know?
Absolutely.
It's intense.
Absolutely. Are most of the men that you work with, are they in New York, or are they around the country or around the world? Or are they mostly local New York?
They then? Used to be all New York. But then the last handful of years, we started working with people that were out of New York but willing to date New York. And then through collaboration, and now, interesting enough, with this whole pandemic, we've actually been working with people that are not in New York and open to dating outside New York. And we've been so successful. We've had three couples move in together and like through the pandemic that met like right before the pandemic and all moved in together, which is a whole other story, which is like, you know, let's take many, you know, months that normally you curate something and let's actually, you know, make a decision quickly because we're going to be having a lot of downtime and people have focused so much more on, you know, taking away the ADD and problem solving and connecting. But the virtual dates that we've been setting up, and that was a whole other thing, which is, you know, people saying, there's no way, why would I go on a virtual date? To yes, I'm please set me up on a virtual date. We've been so successful taking away the geographical issues where people are like, you know what, why not? I'm flexible of where I could work and where I could live, so I'm more open.
Right.
So that's been really successful. So we have been taking people on, and, you know, we have, you know, Canada and Florida and Los Angeles and Europe. So now we do have clients from around the world, and they have a very, very specific person that they're looking for, and that because we collaborate with so many other matchmakers and coaches around the world, we're able to source matches via that collaboration as well.
And, you know, what's interesting too, Lisa, is with the virtual dating, it really forces people to ask lots and lots of questions and take lots and lots of time that they may not normally take when they were meeting in person. And it takes away, you know, the sexual rushing into things as well. so that people
You're
are really
right.
finding out much, much, much more about each other before the first kiss, before the first sexual encounter, which I see is a really good thing. And I, you know, somebody was saying, well, how will I know if I'm attracted to the person? Well, when you see somebody on the screen, you're going to know whether or not there is an initial physical sexual attraction, certainly after a couple of times where, you know, you're talking to one another. And have you found that to be the case as well?
Well, interestingly, I think that the slowing down, and especially people that rush into relationships or, you know, get involved too quickly or don't spend any time getting to know the person, all those issues that you mentioned, yes, I think it slowed people down and allowed them to focus.
Right.
We also give them, you know, tons of fun questions to ask on dates, which helps, you know, people get to know each other better. Interestingly enough, you would think that if you're doing a virtual date, you would be able to tell enough about chemistry, but I have found that it really depends. It's not always the case. It's not as cut and dry. I've had people that think it's going to go really well, and then they meet and they don't feel the chemistry. And I've had people the other way around where they are not sure, and then they meet and they do feel the chemistry. And of course, even when they're meeting now, it's all social distancing. You know, you're going and you're having a picnic and you're bringing your own blanket and all that, but you're able. So it's not as clear cut. That's the fascinating thing. Is that's what I thought. I was like, if I'm talking to someone, Zooming them or FaceTiming them, I'm going to know. And it's not the case. It has gone both ways. So that's the interesting part of it. But I do think that it's allowed people to spend more time getting to know someone so that, you know, we're all so obsessed with whether we're attracted or not attracted, et cetera. But I really believe that if you peel back more layers, connections can happen that you didn't think could happen. So that's a whole other piece that I really believe is an important piece. You know, get to know someone, be curious about them. And this does give the opportunity for that.
No, it certainly does. It's how we take challenges, really, or how we take upsets and turn them into challenges and turn them into opportunities. I mean, it's so clear that you absolutely love what you do. I mean, you've been doing this now for a long time, and I hear the enthusiasm. I hear the fact that you're just, you know, you're probably love it as much today, if not more, as when you first started your matchmaking service. And of course, you started with Patty Stranger in California, right?
Yeah. So it was interesting. I actually worked for another company before Patty. And then in 2000, I became Patty's East Coast director. And I would say that it is probably the most amazing career I could have ever imagined. I always thought that I was going to do social work because I didn't know that matchmaking existed. And then when I realized that matchmaking was a career, I mean, I was like, this is something that I normally do. I am the most meddling human being. If like you're single, and like, oh my God, right? You're single. Da, da. And even if you are with a partner, how did you meet your partner? Da, da. Like, how long have you been together? What made you know that you like that? You know, like I love talking about love. I love it. And so, I feel so incredibly fortunate to have found this career and to be so successful at this career that it does not feel like I'm working. Like, what kind of job is that? Like, being able to just talk to people about their relationships and their love life and their, you know, their pains and their struggles and their excitement and the essence of who they are beyond their facade. And I mean, it honestly is the most amazing career I could have ever imagined. So I feel incredibly lucky.
You sound exactly like me. That is exactly what I say for over 35 years. I mean, you know, we've been, I think, so fortunate to be able to find, you know, careers where we get to know people in ways that most people never do. And, Yeah, I think it's great fortune, and I know I'm sure you are. I'm certainly grateful every day. You know, I'm looking. I can't believe, Lisa, that the time is going so quickly. I want to give everybody your website, and that is info@lisaclampett.com, right? INFO.
Yes.
Yep. At lisaclampett.com. And you are here in New York City, but that is not an issue since people can contact you from all over the world. And I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. And I'm really looking forward to meeting you in person. And congratulations again on your success and on helping so many people find lasting love, because that is, as we know, that is what it's all about. So we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Absolutely. Bye-bye. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Me too. Well, everybody, that is Lisa Clampett, who is the founder and CEO of Lisa Clampett Matchmaking. So for those of you who are looking for lasting love and you're tired of all the online dating sites and for random hookups and meetings, I really do recommend. She sounds terrific. I really can't wait to meet her in person. I think that this might be a wonderful option. And of course, she takes on mostly men. So for all of you men who are listening, who up to this point have not found the kind of relationship that you would like, I would definitely recommend giving Lisa a call. It's amazing when you're having a good time how the time really does, and it comes and goes so quickly here on the Ask Speedy Show. And, you know, as I was saying previously, I can hardly believe that this is the 300th Ask Speedy Show that I've done here on the Progressive Radio Network. And I want to thank you all so much for listening and for downloading and for emailing and for texting. And I'm hoping all of the information and all of the shows that I've done over the past few years have had some real positive impact on your life. And of course, we end the show with the most important and the most beautiful song, of course, which is What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love. And this world certainly does need a lot of sweet love. We need to do a much, much better job in not only learning to love ourselves, but we need to do a much, much better job in learning to love each other. So goodbye, everybody, and I will...